The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, gamble wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my well-dressed, dapper colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to reminisce about lost friends and some of the lessons you can take going forward. We'll don the costume of Hamlet and take you inside a couple of plot twists from Saturday that you'll need to understand better to adjust your power ratings. And tonight in the glass bowl, we don't believe there's a glass ceiling.
So, Dave, Halloween last night. You live right in the center of Las Vegas, right by the Strip. I live out in the sticks, out in the suburbs, a good 20 minutes from anywhere. Trick-or-treaters galore at my house. What about yourself?
Where I live, unfortunately, at the Las Vegas Country Club, no trick-or-treating allowed, which means that I don't have to deal with it, but I also can't do it. How about you? How did it work out?
It worked great. Isaac really enjoyed sitting out and sitting with Kara and us, giving out some candy to all the kids. But I'm telling you, it was like rush hour out there for like an hour. We ran out of candy. I mean, we literally ran out of candy last night. I had to turn off the light and then go inside. So
hence why you didn't bring any in today for us.
not even a smidgen, not even a single Kit Kat. But what's your first take on what you saw last night? Both you and I watched a little bit of football, I believe.
Ended up doing a lot of reminiscing. We watched the ESPN pregame show, as we often do on Mondays, when we're working on advance notes for the week ahead. And Mike Ditka just set us up with something terrific. We like Mike an awful lot, a very thoughtful man. Quoted some Chris Christopherson on the air yesterday, The Pilgrim, Chapter 33. Now, we'll make some odd references to various aspects of culture over time. If you do what we do, day in and day out. And if you lost a game last night on something like the way that the Chargers lost, there are little bits of art that can establish equilibrium. That song, one of the truly special. Let's say one of the 10 best we've ever seen written for people who get involved in this endeavor, the idea of being knocked down and bouncing back. And it made us remember about a good friend who many of you will remember from this industry, Mike Lee, who was a country songwriter in addition to being a sports handicapper. The Pilgrim, Chapter 33, is a song he would have liked to have written. Instead, he lived most of it. Unfortunately, Mike isn't with us anymore. But the memories we can take with us, because over time, the people you want on your side aren't those that throw the best punches, but the ones who've taken the hardest punches and got back up. Mike was one of those. Life did not knock him out. It was a TKO. Just too many punches, including a couple right in the kidneys. But we remember him fondly, and take those memories and get up ourselves when we get knocked down and move forward. Like the knockdown that comes from having no chocolate brought in from people that you would have expected better of. Teddy, outside of no chocolate, what do you bring with you from Monday night?
Well, I certainly don't bring any Chris Christopherson references. You know, please come to Boston. Yeah, Boston, great city. Not going back anytime soon. My first take? Come on, we got to rant about the Chargers here. I'm like, unbelievable. North Turner, Phillip Rivers, and San Diego. They should have won last night's game by what? About three scores, maybe 17, 20, 21 points, settling for field goals in the red zone, turning the ball over all over the field, making special teams miscues, penalties galore. And then, of course, the drop snap, the fumble, when all they have to do is basically kneel on the football and kick the game winner. Very, very frustrating way to lose with San Diego last night. But this is nothing new or different for the Chargers. We have to be used to this. Look at what they've done. Let's see. So far this year, 2-4 against the spread as favorites. two of those being straight-up losses. We're going to count the game at the Jets, which San Diego closed minus one, with the Chargers being favorites and losing straight-up in that ball game. Last year, 2-5 against the spread to open the season as chalk. They lost all five of those games as favorites in straight-up fashion. In 09, they started 2-4 ATS as chalk, two straight-up losses. SSDD, same stuff, different day for San Diego. Frustrating way to get out of Monday Night Football without at least a push from that ball game. And, of course, that's going to bring us right into Market Watch. We've got to talk about the new numbers posted this morning for the games, for the teams involved in Monday Night Football last night. We've got Kansas City at home, minus 5, 39.5 against the winless Miami Dolphins, a number that some people might think is short, but the betting markets don't seem to think so. Chiefs at 5-point chalk at the opener. And Green Bay, minus 5.5 and 52.5 on the road at San Diego. And the early money in that ballgame has come squarely on the Packers, that number up to 6 in most locations.
We'll talk a little bit about that Packer line movement, because it wasn't just the way the Chargers played last night. Also, some injuries at running back that we'll get to in our Insider Six-Pack. But a big part of today's show, and of course it'll reflect back to the Kris Kristofferson and the type of music we talked about, this is a character show today. It's going to come up several different times over the course of the broadcast. We start to wonder about Phillip Rivers a little bit. Because now, this deep into the season, if you count fumbles lost as well as interceptions, Phillip Rivers has twice as many turnovers as touchdown passes. That is an awful ratio. And we wonder if maybe we're at a turning point, not just for the season, but maybe one of these career levels. Rivers has a back to the wall this week. Just think about that last turnover, the fumbled snap near the end of the game. Now, so many times, turnovers are caused by aggressive play. You're trying to make something happen. Brett Favre being the classic, who had so many mistakes by trying to force action. Tony Romo still does that. But let's think about that fumbled snap, because as you walk to the line of scrimmage, your thought process is very limited. It's not, well, if the safety sits back in coverage, I need to check down and go to the running back in the flat. It's not, okay, are they going to blitz from the right side off of that edge? It's, I have to take the snap and hand it to the running back. There was nothing else. No other decisions to be made. There was no distraction at that moment. So how do you make that mistake without distraction? Because this is not a 99 out of 100 at the center exchange. This is 999 out of 1,000. To make that mistake at that point, well, there is an awful lot of pressure on Phillip Rivers coming up this week.
Yeah, but San Diego, 4 turnovers again last night, and turnovers at the worst possible times and the worst possible places on the field. It seems to be what the Chargers have been doing. You know, we have 25 penalties for 200 yards over the last 2 weeks from the Chargers, both, again, straight-up losses as favorites. And we had, you know, a sluggish look, a lethargic look about San Diego last night. Phillip Rivers seems to me, Dave, to be the type of QB might, you know, he's been in San Diego throughout the entirety of his career. I don't think the Chargers will ever trade him. I don't think he'll ever go out of town. But he seems to me to be a guy who's kind of been beaten down by the situation where he's at. I'm not sure the Chargers as a team are particularly hungry and focused at the task at hand. It just seems like Kansas City was a lot hungrier than San Diego was last night. And some of that has to go on the quarterback. Maybe a change of scenery would go a long way towards Phillip Rivers, because this guy is impeccable character. I mean, why does San Diego end with Phillip Rivers, and why do they trade Drew Brees to get Phillip Rivers the starting job? Marty Schottenheimer was truly impressed with Rivers' character when he coached him at the Senior Bowl. He was Schottenheimer's guy to begin with, and Schottenheimer in this case, at least talent-wise, made a pretty good read. Character-wise, well, still to be determined.
Now, obviously, we have two elements that come out of any result. When Teddy and I talk about that San Diego flow and that sloppiness and all the penalties, and talk about Kansas City looking like the hungrier team, we've got to put that in perspective from the other side. At the end of regulation, and we recommend that you do this a lot. We'll talk about this from a point spread standpoint and a statistical standpoint over time. At the end of regulation, freeze the numbers. And it's easy to do that the way that box scores are kept online these days. It's a game where San Diego, in regulation play, won the first downs 29-16. Total offense, 463-281. Now, if you put that into a football simulation model, that's a 14-17 point win for San Diego most nights. So here's what we're saying is, as bad as San Diego was, I think about, you know, 9 trips inside the 30-yard line with only 1 touchdown, Kansas City didn't do all that much right. It looked like when they finally took control and made a nice drive in overtime, it was against a San Diego defense that was a little bit tired. Because keep in mind, because of their injuries, particularly Sean Phillips being out, replacements were having to play more snaps than usual. When that happens, they physically and mentally wear down. We didn't see a lot of good out of Kansas City. So a lot of bad from San Diego. But even though the Chiefs have now won four games in a row, there wasn't much to like.
9 trips inside the 30-yard line, 1 touchdown for the Chargers.
9. Right? 1.
Hey, we really appreciate all the feedback we've been getting. Great questions coming in every day. Please keep those emails coming. The address, sportsday@covers.com. Toll-free listener rant line, 866-966-4599. And, of course, the covers.com community welcomes everyone. Active threads and discussions going right now. covers.com/postingforums. When we come back, speaking of posting, we're going to go all post-mortem on you after this short break.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence? Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gowns on. It's time for the postmortem. We're going to take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't. One of the things we love so much about William Shakespeare over time is the ability to define a moment, to take all these wonderful decisions that come across in the course of our lives and get inside of that particular moment where a choice is made. Football is a lot like that in that so many times one single play can cause something almost cataclysmic on the scoreboard. You might think that the most you could score on one play is a touchdown, 6 points, and then an extra point. But no, when you break these games down the right way, one play can often mean a swing of several touchdowns in a game flow. So when we see this happen, it's time for us to help you to define those games, to make power ratings, and once again, the play's the thing.
Chris Christopherson, Shakespeare, yeah, we're pulling out all the stops for today's show, and we're going to start, forget Christopherson, forget Shakespeare, we're going to start in Piscataway, New Jersey, where we saw Rutgers on the verge of something very special against West Virginia on Saturday. They were up 31-28 in the snow in early fourth quarter action against West Virginia this past weekend. They were driving to take a commanding lead. They stalled at the 11-yard line. Greg Schiano went for the jugular in this instance. He called for a fake field goal that, had it been successful, would have meant a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter for the Scarlet Knights. The play was there for Rutgers to accomplish, but holder Patrick Kivelhand underthrew an open Brandon Coleman, and the ball hung in the air just long enough for Darwin Cook to break it up. From Coleman, who was wide open there, quote, "It looked open. The defender made a good play on it. I should have made a better play on it. I should have come back to the ball. I had every opportunity to catch the pass, and that was our chance to secure our lead. It just didn't happen." Of course, the end result, fake field goal, no points. West Virginia gets the ball, gets momentum, back-to-back touchdowns, and the Mountaineers end up winning the game by 10. A pretty important play in that instance. And in this one particular situation, Dave, we have to say Greg Schiano was going for the jugular. He was being aggressive, so we can't fault him for doing that. But it's the snow, man. It's a crazy back-and-forth game in the snow. You're letting your holder throw a pass into the end zone. And the thing that bugged me about this play the most, again, I'm not going to criticize a guy for being aggressive. You want aggressive coaches. Aggressive coaches win games. But with most of the fourth quarter still to play, even if Rutgers goes up 10 there, the game's not a done deal, and had they kicked the field goal to go up 6, West Virginia has time to go down, score a touchdown to take a one-point lead. Rutgers still had time to go down and kick and drive down the field and kick the game winner. So what bugs me about these coaches when they go for two in bad spots, when they make weird decisions in terms of kicking the field goal or going for the going for it on fourth down, it feels like they don't think there's going to be any action in the game after that particular play. There was a whole fourth quarter of action to play here if Rutgers would have kicked the field goal in that instance or connected on that particular fake field goal. They probably want to go won the game. Instead, you're looking at Rutgers, double-digit losers, their 17th consecutive loss to West Virginia.
In this case, we could say Greg Schiano was Othello. He thought he was losing when he actually was winning, didn't understand the scoreboard, and look how it played out. Okay, we've had your notes. You want prettier girls on the show. That's not going to happen. We're pretty much G-rated, but we'll give you some Vanderbilt cheerleaders instead. Nice, wholesome Southeast Conference co-eds. They had a lot of reason to cheer on Saturday. They almost had a reason to begin doing somersaults. Fourth quarter, you're leading Arkansas 28-20, second and goal at the 3-yard line. A chance to break that game wide open. A touchdown, and it's 35-20, you win it. A field goal, it's 31-20, you still likely win it. So what happens on that second and goal play? Zach Stacy fumbles. Jerry Franklin picks it up and runs it 96 yards for an Arkansas touchdown. The entire game swings. We look up later. It's 31-28 Arkansas final score. If that score is all you see, you've handicapped this game the wrong way. Vanderbilt was on the verge of a knockout punch. You need to incorporate that going forward. A lot of times on this show, we talk about the notion that numbers are this prayer that we have to try to understand human behavior a little bit better and the idiosyncrasies and vagaries of sport. Isn't always the case, though. Numbers can only do so much. They're synthetic. They don't breathe. They do not have personalities. They do not have character. Don't let anyone ever tell you any different. What we want to do a lot of times on this show is try to humanize the numbers, try to make them real, try to take the numbers that you're working with and put a human element behind them so that you understand those numbers a little bit better. We've got a great example from this Sunday in the NFL. Steven Jackson walking the walk. A lot of people talk the talk. It happens every day and every in Denver. Not too many people can back it up. What you're going to take away from Steven Jackson on Sunday, and these are terrific numbers, by the way, 159 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns. He also caught 4 passes for 32 more yards. That's how they beat New Orleans statistically. But they beat New Orleans in an entirely different way. And to understand how and why they won that game is something we can take forward with us.
Sure. We got to talk exactly about what Steven Jackson did besides what he did on the field in terms of inspiring his teammates for this one, because all the talk is about how Steven Jackson's legendary pregame speech fired up the Rams in a way they haven't been fired up yet this year. Jackson couldn't sleep the night before the game. Now, that's what happens when you're a fierce competitor and your team is 0-6, and he made up his mind to address the team and take leadership of a group badly in need of some type of leader. I'm going to let Steven Jackson's words take it from here. This is a long quote, but I think it's worthwhile reading on the air because it's a quote that speaks volumes about what Jackson was able to accomplish and how he feels about the game of football. I'm going to start here. Quote, "I couldn't sleep. There was just something resonating in me. I was just asking myself and praying, to be honest to you, about what I can say to inspire this team to play 60 minutes of good football. I just dwelt on what was going on, our situation, and what we had been through. In that time alone, and in that setting, I found the words I wanted to say to the team, what I wanted to address this team, because I really believe in what we have here. I really believe in the guys." Pretty much all I said was, if you've ever been in a fight, you've ever been hit with a punch, you only have two decisions. You can either run from the person, the opponent, or you dig deep inside to find a will to keep swinging and keep fighting. I challenge them, not as football players. I challenge them as men and saying, you know what? We've been hit. We've taken a lot of shots, and we will be hit in this game going against a potent offense. And when that hit comes, I challenge you to respond in a way where you have to dig deep inside and find something inside you that you didn't know you had. I think today in the fourth quarter, you saw that. And boy, that hit home with some of the other players. Here's from safety Darian Stewart. Jack challenged us, and that's what we needed to hear. He challenged us to swing and make those punches effective, and we did. St. Louis won on Sunday, and they won going away against New Orleans. Much of that had to do with the character in that locker room.
When we come back, we'll talk about whether or not there's going to be an NBA season, and there are two things you don't want to do. You don't want to piss off Jacob behind the camera here, and certainly not Bill Belichick on the football field. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, it's time to answer the viewer emails and listener emails that have come in. And there's one here where we're not going to give credit to a specific listener or viewer for this one because we've gotten a bunch of questions on it. But we've gotten several notes in both the posting forums and our email box talking about the NBA impasse. Let's combine them all at once. Dave, is there reason for optimism that there's going to be any pro basketball this year? And if there is, do we have reason to be optimistic there are going to be good bets to make on this side of the counter?
To tell you the truth, I haven't followed the impasse very much because there's not a whole lot I can do to make that process speed up. So we hope they play. We hope they play soon. But the problem, now, in the NFL, the first couple of weeks, we talked often about how odd those results were, especially from a total standpoint. It was a different sport being played. Here's your issue is not only were you having to handicap those games week by week, but incorporating them into your database going forward. Those first couple of weeks of NFL play this year probably shouldn't be in your full database. The NBA has a chance to be even worse. They will force themselves out there onto the court far before they're ready because we're already into the season. They want to have as many games played as possible. These teams are not practicing. They're not having workouts together. And it's a sport where chemistry really, really does matter. So the issue is not just will they come back or when. What do we do with them as they come back, keeping in mind that every time a game is tough to handicap because of various reasons, means it's also tough to put into your database and treat that result as though it was real. Teddy, this could be a circus.
It could be, Dave, but the bottom line is I do think we're going to have an NBA season. I may take the over on when that season starts. We've seen games already canceled through the end of November, and frankly, I don't think the league minds very much. The owners certainly don't mind. Early season is not where they make their money, it's almost disposable games. We're not going to see full 82-game season this season. I don't think there's any question about it. We did see, this happened once before, back in the 1998-99 campaign, once before in the David Stern era, in the modern era of NBA basketball. We saw a 50-game schedule that started in January. My guess is that we're going to see something relatively comparable this year. We're going to have a full season. We're going to have a season. We're going to have playoffs, but we're not talking about 82 games. And we're probably not looking at games pre-Christmas, let alone pre-Thanksgiving or anything like that. So, solid chance. The bottom line is there's too much money left on the table, but owners and players at an impasse right now, and it's going to take some time until the missing game checks force some of the key negotiators here back to the table. Kush J sent a great question in the forum today. We're going to answer that tomorrow about poker, but Kush, got to ask you on air. Is that bubble butt real, or did you Photoshop that? You got to let us know. We'll talk a little poker on the show tomorrow. But for right now, we got to go inside the numbers.
And by the way, if that is real, we will give you Jacob's email address because I'd like to be in contact with that young lady. We're going to talk about Bill Belichick several times over the course of this week and the defensive issues that they're having to deal with because we might have a bit of a conundrum. When we go to today's topic, going to tell you how good Belichick has been in a specific role. But often in sports, we also have to say, okay, this is what's happened in that role, but do the same parameters apply going forward? In this case, a New England defense badly riddled by injury. But at the very top of the food chain in sports, you have terrific competitors that do very, very well after they've been knocked down, tying it back into the theme we've had right from the top of the show. Is there anyone in the NFL better than Bill Belichick at this? When we go inside the numbers for Tuesday, let's take a look at how Belichick has performed off of a loss. This is going back to last nine seasons. 21-3 straight up, 19-5 against the spread. That spread margin at the bottom shows you how much they beat the spread by in those 24 games. 258.5, that means they beat the spread by an average of 11 points per game. That tells you that even though this may look like a small sample, there's a lot of meat on that bone.
There sure is, Dave. Coming up, the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Let's crack open those glasses for an Insider Six-Pack where we drop six tidbits of knowledge for you for the upcoming football weekend. We're going to start in Oklahoma where a really good feel-good story probably came to an end at least for this season. On Oklahoma walk-on running back Dominique Whatley led the team in rushing yards, 627 rushing yards for the season. He suffered a fractured left ankle on the first play of Saturday's win over Kansas State. He's out for the season. Now, Dominique Whatley, not Whatley. Whatley, far off the recruiting radar. He was a military brat, kind of traveled around, played for a bunch of different high schools, and never really got a chance to get become a big-time recruit. He walked on at Oklahoma and actually became a star, and he's expected to become a full scholarship player when the semester ends in December. Now, Oklahoma does have a lot of depth at running back. If that depth is a bit short on experience. But Brennan Clay is going to get most of the carries this week. We're going to see Roy Finch getting carries. We're going to see Brandon Williams getting carries. All three of them underclassmen. Perhaps some issues to work on in terms of the blocking schemes when the Sooners get blitzed on defense.
One of the things we like to focus on are home field advantages that aren't real, yet are still factored in the point spread. So think about the Rose Bowl this Saturday when Arizona State travels to play UCLA. Yeah, they've got a couple of points tacked on to UCLA for a home advantage that might not be real. Note that Arizona State has 44 players from California on their roster. It's been a big part of Dennis Erickson's recruiting is working that Southern California base. Here's his quote on the situation. I think it's a positive because our players get a chance to go and play in front of their friends and families. And there certainly are tickets available. UCLA's crowd count for Saturday's win over Cal, 55,604. The record seating at the Rose Bowl for one game, 106,869. UCLA only coming in at about half capacity, so a lot of Arizona State kids playing in front of a lot of friends and family. When you watch this game, it might even look like a neutral field at times.
Let's go to Cleveland and talk about what's going on in the Browns' backfield over the course of the last couple of weeks. They've had an awful time getting any kind of a ground game going, especially early in contests. And for those of you who like to bet quarters or like to bet some of the derivatives in some of these ball games, certainly this stat's going to stand out. The Browns have been outscored 44-3 in the first quarter of their ball games this year, really struggling early on. Well, things have gone from bad to worse with the Browns running back situation. Montario Hardesty is going to miss at least the next three games with a torn right calf muscle. Peyton Hillis has been unable to suit up or even practice with his pulled hamstring. He's a maybe at best for this coming weekend. And Brandon Jackson has already been lost for the season. So the new number one, well, it's looking like it could be Chris Ogbayana from Texas, the rookie from Texas. If you never heard of him play at Texas, don't be surprised. The guy was a fullback in Mac Brown's system. Now he may be the starting running back for the Browns this weekend, just a couple of weeks after being claimed off waivers from the Texans squad. Looks like Cleveland's going to be holding some open auditions for running back this week, and there's a chance they're going to try to work, as they always try to work, Josh Cribbs into the running game. So far this season, Pat Shurmur has not been successful at getting Joshua Cribbs, their best playmaker, the ball in space anywhere on the field.
This is a great week to be an unemployed running back. Teddy just told you about Cleveland. We're going to talk about the Redskins now and then San Diego in a few minutes. But you'll note that Washington signed Tashard Choice yesterday. How bad has Choice been so far this year? Dallas cut him while Felix Jones was injured. So you know what? We need depth at running back. Our top guy's out. We don't want you anymore anyway. He'd only averaged 2.7 yards per carry for the Cowboys, lost fumbles in back-to-back games. They released him. Washington picks him up. Only one Washington running back carried the ball against Buffalo on Sunday. Ryan Terrain, 8 carries, only 14 yards. The inability to run led to 9 sacks on John Beck in that game. That tied a Washington franchise record. It shows you how desperate the Redskins are that not only do they sign Choice, he's going to be right in the rotation this week.
Exactly. He'll be getting carries right from the get-go. Here's Tim Tebow. We have to talk about Tim Tebow on every show, right? We were able to cash a bet this past weekend going against Tim Tebow. The play of the day on Detroit, that was not a real sweat for those of you who had the Lions in that ballgame. But here's the questions about Tim Tebow. How long is this experiment going to last? It may just be game to game right now. This is what John Fox said on Monday. Quote, for this week, yes. So that's a really ringing confidence maker right there for a struggling young QB. Here's the other quote from Fox. You know, really in this business, all things are possible. And Brady Quinn is a guy that we acquired before I got here, but he's shown flashes in our practice in preseason games. So right now, we're in the process of finding out who that quarterback is, and we'll leave it at that. Well, despite the QB problems and the defensive problems, Denver also has problems at running back. Willis McGahee had surgery on his right hand last week. He may be given clearance to try to practice this week. We'll have to see. I was able to handle that football with a cast on his right arm.
If you're an unemployed running back and you don't want to play behind the offensive lines of Cleveland and Washington, there's a better option this week. You might get a call from San Diego. Chargers went into last night's game without Michael Tolbert, and then it went from bad to worse. Ryan Matthews suffers a groin injury, not sure when he's going to be able to return to practice. And Curtis Brinkley, who just played super off the bench last night, they find after the game he has a concussion. They're not sure when he's going to be able to practice again. When the Chargers take the practice field tomorrow, they will have one healthy running back on the entire roster, Jacob Hester, more of a fullback type. They're really going to hope that they can get Tolbert back this week, but don't be surprised if the Chargers sign someone and bring them in before they face the Packers on Sunday.
When we come back, we're going to put all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! In Toledo for Money Time today, one game on the board for a Tuesday, and it's a MAC West showdown. The Rockets, -9, total of 67 against last year's MAC West winner, the Northern Illinois Huskies. Toledo taking most of the money in this ballgame so far. Total stayed pretty much flat since the open.
It's hard to imagine someone getting that excited to do Money Time over a MAC game. But, you know, this is one tonight that does have that level of merit. Let's just see the Money Time intro tomorrow for Ohio Temple and see if we can get that same level of enthusiasm. Actually, a terrific matchup here. If you're going to watch one MAC game all season, this is it. We start, though, with Toledo bringing a chip on their shoulder. The best team in the conference might want this game more than any other on their schedule because of what happened last year. In DeKalb, Illinois, they were flat-out embarrassed. You might see 65-30 as the final. Think, okay, they hung around a little bit. They moved the ball on offense. Now, it was 28-0 at halftime. They were never in the game. And then a wild, bizarre second half saw 67 points ring up. We love the balance, though, of this Toledo offense. Talk about a 1-2 quarterback combination that works. It's happened with Toledo. A right-hander and a left-hander, which also makes it tougher for opposing defenses to game plan. But Austin Danton's passing rating, 150.6. Terrence Owens, 149.1. that close. They've both been that effective. Of course, it makes it easy for them when you've got a kid like Eric Page. Only midway through his junior season, already 250 pass receptions. And
bless you.
An NFL prospect on the way. Sorry, folks, we couldn't avoid that one.
Hey, it's live TV, man. Enjoy it. Sneeze again, Dave. Dance around and sneeze. It makes for good visuals. But the bottom line, we talk about this Toledo team. They've been tough against some really quality competition this year. You remember how they went to the Horseshoe in Columbus, and they were right there to win the game against Ohio State. If only for a wrong read on one of those read option plays, they would have been in the end zone and won that ball game against the Buckeyes. Instead, lost by, I think it was 5, covered the number with ease. We saw them go on the road to Syracuse. The Syracuse team that went bowling last year is going to go bowling against this year. They won that game. I know the scoreboard says they lost by 3 in overtime, but the missed extra point that was ruled as a good extra point actually cost Toledo a victory in that contest. In my mind, it's a W. And then, of course, even the game against Boise where they lost and failed to cover, they moved the football against the Broncos. They were able to hang in the trenches against Boise State. Toledo has certainly proven their mettle against quality foes this year. And this is a Northern Illinois defense. Man, a lot of questions about whether Northern Illinois can stop anyone so far this season, on the road in particular. Let's see. Kansas had a season best 45 points, a season best 534 yards against Northern Illinois. We saw Central Michigan with a season high 48 points against the Huskies, a season high 553 yards. We saw Buffalo. The 30 points they scored there is number 2 this season, the 572 yards of total offense. That's their best performance. Oh, that's the only road games Northern Illinois played this year. So every team they faced has moved the ball up and down the field against them. And this is one, as you mentioned, Dave, one QB rotation, one dual QB rotation that actually seems to work. This is not a quarterback controversy. This is two quarterbacks with differing styles, both getting opportunities to run the football team.
We're fighting through this one today, so we apologize for that last little sneeze, but sometimes you gotta play hurt. Which reminds me, we haven't done a Dan Jenkins reference yet. I'm almost embarrassed that we're into the third week of the show. We haven't done a Dan Jenkins reference yet. If you haven't read You Gotta Play Hurt, that's a good one. Go back and pick it up. You might have to go to a library for it. Not sure you'll find it in print. So with all we're saying about Toledo, and all we're saying about this Northern Illinois defense, is it attractive to lay the points? No, there's a problem on the other side of the equation, and it helps to set us up with something much better than playing Toledo as a favorite. Chandler Harnish, just having a dynamite season at Northern Illinois. You want to talk about a senior stepping up and literally controlling an offense? He's already thrown for almost 1,700 yards and 12 touchdowns. But look at the rushing numbers. Not just 738 yards rushing and 9 touchdowns, but 7.9 per carry. Now, that's very significant because that also includes quarterback sacks. When you take sacks out of the equation, Harnish is getting about 10 yards per rush attempt. We saw what they did to that Toledo defense last year, 65 points, a lot of the same offensive players in hand. But Toledo now comes in a little bit weaker, something you probably wouldn't have read about earlier this morning. But this broke a little while ago. Charles Ransifer, starting safety for Toledo, has been suspended for the game. They will not announce why. They said they will say so after the game. He actually sent out a Twitter saying, not going to play. My guys will pick up for me. And the university made him go back and delete that post. So Ransifer will not play. Chandler Harnish is going to be able to put a lot of points on the board. So when we add it all up, Teddy, what does it look like?
Well, it looks like we're going to have a play of the day for Tuesday on Toledo and Northern Illinois over the total of 67. Again, the Rockets and the Huskies over the total tonight. That's going to wrap it up.
Well, thank you for that, by the way, because you did something that Zyrtec couldn't do. I think that just cleared my allergies.
Right.
My sinuses are clearing up after that call. Thank you for that.
I think it's my wasabi cologne that might have done that for you, Dave.
That's what it was. I had some concerns.
That's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.